Hello, Yolanda Brown here. Now, I really enjoyed recording this episode all about film music, but for rights reasons, sadly, you won't hear any music in the episode that you're about to listen to. However, don't worry, because if you want to hear any of the pieces that we talk about today, then do check out the special film music Spotify playlist in the show notes. Hello and welcome to LPO Offstage. I'm Yolanda Brown and this is the podcast where we explore the world of classical music and what goes on behind the scenes of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Now, how do you like your popcorn? Salty, sweet, or a bit of both? I do love a good mix with some Maltesers in for good measure. Well, it's time to grab a snack, dim the lights, and definitely silence your phone, because today we are talking about soundtracks. Now, whether it's music for the silver screen, the small screen, or even the humble advert, it's often the music that stirs the emotion and stays in our hearts. So I'm ready to walk the red carpet. And as you would expect, my cast of co-stars is both glamorous and expert. They're trying to laugh silently, but you can let it out. It's okay. Lisa Macklis plays the tuba with the LPO and Simon Carrington is the principal timpanist. Thank you both so much for joining me. You can laugh out loud now.
Lovely to see you, Len. That's safe and glamorous have been described as another.
It's all absolutely true. Now, as orchestral players, you really get close to the glitz of Hollywood, well, closer than most at least. What's your favourite soundtrack, Lee?
I can't pin it down to one, because it'll have to be something from the 70s, because I was born in 1968, and it'd probably have to be one of the Bond movies. That opening title, John Barry, James Bond theme, that's probably my deepest memory. Yeah. But actually, the first soundtrack which I was aware at that time was Saturday Night Fever. That was probably the first time I thought, I want to go and buy the record to a soundtrack. I loved it.
Oh, that's lovely. Great memories. Simon, how about you?
I mean, pretty much anything by the great John Williams, including E.T., I think is really one of his very, very best. And Star Wars, obviously, could go on. Some of the Harry Potter music as well. But I think the first proper film that I went to see in a big cinema when I was a kid, and I probably shouldn't have been there, actually, thinking about it, was Jaws.
Oh, my goodness.
So Jaws will always occupy a special place in my heart.
Well, this is why we're here. We are going to be exploring what music does, what it brings. But I felt you dropped some names already. So I'm going to keep the favourite questions going. Favourite composers for film?
I love the older guys as well, you know, from Bernard Herrmann and Korngold.
Yes.
And people like that, you know, back from the 40s and 50s. Yeah. Fantastic. But I'm sure that somebody, you know, even as great as John Williams would, I would imagine, happily admit that he drew much inspiration and skill from listening to the scores of that day. In fact, he used to orchestrate for Bernard Herrmann, you know, in the Hollywood studios, and Waxman, and I don't know, maybe Max Steiner or people like that.
He grew up with the best.
Yeah, I mean, he was really steeped in it and learnt his craft from a very, very young age, playing the piano originally in the in one of the film studio orchestras. So, but I don't think he's been outperformed.
You think he still carries the crown? That's good. I'll take that. What is it about music and the visuals that comes together? What does the music bring? And why does it bring it?
I think, you know, with two very powerful senses, our eyes and our ears. And when those two link up, it's a very, really, really powerful emotion. Yes. And I think that's why it works.
You don't generally hear people saying they went to a fantastic film, but the music was a bit duff.
That's true.
Because they are so closely interlinked. And actually, John Williams, I've heard him say, and this was an incredible thing to say, really, very humble, is that ultimately he thinks a film composer's job is that the music is not heard. So that the watcher is so wrapped up in what's going on the screen, and of course that's all enhanced, it's almost defined by the music in to some degree, but they're not really aware of the music. I thought that was an amazing thing to say for somebody who's written such incredible music over the years, you know, for 100 odd films, that ultimately It shouldn't be heard.
No, you are absolutely right. I'm glad that you brought in the senses there, because it is. It's the hearing and the seeing. But actually, you're not aware of the hearing, so you're feeling. You know,
yes,
and it's that combination, if you had an equation. But why is sort of the live performing of it so important? And I know you've had experience of performing for film. When you're in the recording, are you aware of the storyline, the plot? I mean, we talk about opera all the time, and sometimes you're in the pit, you can't see what's going on. Are you aware of the storyline? Are you just looking at the dots?
I think it depends. I was fortunate enough to be involved in the recording of The Revenge of the Sith, John Williams' huge orchestra, Abbey Road Studios, and the film is being screened behind you. So John Williams is conducting without a click track, and he's basically, there's a red line and a green line, and they run parallel. So he's watching that, and he's, as soon as he passes the green line, he starts conducting, and he's basically doing it in the sort of old school way. I don't think anyone does that anymore that I know of. And so you record in certain sections of the film, so you can get a sort of, you know, a vibe, so to speak. But I think nowadays you turn up, sometimes there's not even the whole orchestra there. It's just a few brass players, and you're laying your bit down. And you have no idea what the movie is. You know, you just see a Q1 or Q2, but you know, I think most experienced musicians, as soon as the music starts, you sort of know what they're after.
And this sort of modern approach is where the click track comes in that you've described. What is that experience, and especially in percussion department, of playing with a click track? Do you still feel that you're part of the story, or it's a recording, the red light's on, we've got to go with the pulse, the click track is giving you the beat?
As Lee said, everything's changed. The first film that I was lucky enough to do was a bit of a flop, I think, actually, but it was back in 1989 with Elmer Bernstein.
Whoa.
And it was called Slipstream, and it so it didn't go anywhere, but it was very interesting for the reasons that Lee's outlined. You know, this is Abbey Road 1, you know, the iconic place. Elmer Bernstein was there. I think he probably had some sort of TV screen right in front of him, but he was doing it old school. And he was just watching these ribbons, as Lee said, they come across the screen. 1, 2, 3, 4, but. And that's where the shot changes. And so he, at the end of that bar, has got to catch it. Yeah, and this is the first time, because the music is the last thing to go on to a film. And maybe these days with special effects to add, there's much more of that, obviously, but basically it's the last thing. So he'd be playing this through for the first time. And I just remember that he could watch this thing, the ribbons are coming by, just carries on. This is about maybe 2 minutes worth of cue.
Yes.
And then he got to the end of that. He said, right, okay, let's change that after B to a 3-4 bar there, and then make that a 5-4, and all of that, and adjusted everything.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Okay, let's do it again. And second time, not third or fourth time, second time. It would be perfect. And that was, as Lee saying, a proper old school way of doing it. But that's even, you know, in the old days of the full orchestra being in all of the studio, which now is not the case again, sadly.
But even with such a large ensemble, do you get sort of a sound check moment with the sound engineer where, you know, you can work with your balances in terms of hearing the click track, hearing the rest of the orchestra? Do you get that time, or do you literally have to rock up?
Usually it'll always be a case of most people at the back saying more click, because we have to play smack on the click.
Yes.
Just following from Simon's point, in the sitting in the brass section and the percussion, it's very, very loud. So we can't, quite often we can't hear the click. And also with blowing as well, and blowing quite loud, your hearing isn't as good. So we need to sort of crank it up quite a few times. In fact, probably every session that we've ever done, just before we start, the conductor would say, is everybody happy with the click?
What click?
You can't hear it.
Turn it up. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in the auction sitting at the front. They're probably wondering why.
Yes,
you know, because it's just very loud, and you can't hear it.
And, you know, nowadays, how they record orchestras, I mean, everyone could have their own isolated line, so they could turn you up in the mix and sort of that. I mean, technology has got more involved, I'm guessing. What's your preference?
Personally, I prefer, you know, I started off 30-odd years ago, and sessions, I mean, you would have the guy who wrote the conducting, and you'll have the film behind you, and rarely use a click. And so you're basically playing the same as you would in a concert hall.
And that was amazing, because John Williams, a very skilled conductor as well, and he spent probably more time than most conductors would, just working on sound and ensemble and making sure that the orchestra sounded not just good enough, but really, really good, really polished. And then, I don't know why, things changed. Things were much more close mic'd, and everyone was encouraged, particularly at the back, to play very much quiet and don't worry, the mic's going to pick it up. But it's totally against your instinct, particularly playing with him and in this fantastic, big, glittering orchestral music.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to sit here and this great big climax coming up and I want to go, wah! And you go, boom, you know, and that's not,
what, they want from you.
Not what we do. Yeah. But that's, we had to get used to that. And then the logical extrapolation eventually that everyone's just doing it separately.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier for the sound guys to control a course like that.
Yeah.
For ensemble and sound. But it's not what it used to be.
In Lord of the Rings, you know, when we recorded Lord of the Rings with Howard Shaw, I think we did both.
Yeah. Well, where John Williams was a real maestro, Howard would have the headphones on with the click in his headphones. I think very often he had the click, but we didn't.
Yes.
Sometimes I think that's what was going on. Because now, instead of Elmer Bernstein watching the ribbon coming across the screen and going, boom,
he's got that tick, tick.
He's got the tick, 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 but it's alternating over the course of, say, a minute or two's music by 0.21 of a, or something like that. It's ridiculously minute changes of tempo so that it still fits. So Howard would be there and he would spend quite a lot of time, I think it's fair to say, practicing the cue and making sure that it was absolutely right. He would go through many, many times doing that. But you'd record in a 3-hour session, you know, sometimes if you're allowed to record 20 minutes of music, but Howard would only do, you know, three, four minutes.
Yeah, no, you said, I mean, it's such a, if you do get to have a listen, it's a really insightful process to hear it from his point of view and sort of what he was trying to get, and that perfectionism and when to say, it's done now, move on. It's really, really interesting to listen to.
It was interesting for us because we've been used to recording movies in 2 days.
Yes. Yeah, you know, this was months.
And this was a month, 3 minutes a day, 4 minutes a day, you know, 6 hours.
Yeah.
And looking at one sheet of paper, you know, thinking, you know.
We could have banged this out.
This is, they must have a huge budget or something, you know.
And also, of course, you'd have the aspect that on certainly at least one of the films, Peter Jackson was there for part of it. He came over.
Yeah.
I remember listening to playback in the box of a long cue that Howard had done, you know, composed painstakingly for this 10-minute scene that was really, really emotional. We took all day to record it, and it got to the, you know, towards the end of the day, sort of around about 9 o'clock in the evening, and Peter Jackson sat there and they, you know, they had a conversation and he clearly wasn't feeling it, and Howard had to go away and back to his hotel and compose a whole new 10 minutes worth of music.
That's hard.
So that was going on as well. But a fascinating part of the organic process that is, you know, making a film from both sides.
And it just goes to show how there are so many different approaches to getting this final one product out there. Have you seen the movie Tar or Maestro? Have you seen it?
I have seen Maestro, which actually should be, with the amount that Lenny Bernstein smokes, should be called Tar.
Should be.
I mean, it's quite unbelievable. There is not a single moment in the film where most of the people on screen cigarette on the gun. So I have seen.
Well, the thing I wanted to touch on, and there might have been other films, Lee, that you've seen where they're trying to shine a light on what the music industry or what being a musician is like. Obviously, these are sensationalized films and they're trying to get the full Hollywood value. But do you think they're helpful? Sort of, we try to demystify what musicians go through and what the industry goes through. But of course, sometimes it goes maybe too far, or maybe it's telling too much of the truth. How do you feel when you watch these sort of music-facing films that have great soundtracks as well, but the storylines and how they talk about musicians?
I think, you know, I'm sure that's the same in every profession. I think they got better.
Mm.
And from what I gather, Maestro, you know, Bradley Cooper was coached by the fabulous Yannick Nezet-Seguin. And I think they spent quite a lot of time together. So I'm sure that is probably as best you'll see.
No, and it is about, well, any actor absorbing themselves into the world. But you can't learn a lifetime of conducting or a lifetime of playing an instrument just simply by those lessons. What's your thought on miming, Simon?
Well, in that particular instance, I think Bradley Cooper did, you know, he was invested in the whole thing, obviously, and did extremely well. But you could tell that this, it was nowhere near what you would regard as this is a serious conductor. This is Lenny. Actually, it's a bit, you know, along the same theme. The connection between the visuals and the music was just not quite there to me.
I was watching a Steve Martin, LA Story film featuring Steve Martin, and very early into the film, there's one of the actresses playing the tuba.
Oh.
And he sort of falls in love with this idea, and it's all wrong.
Oh, no.
You know, this doesn't look right. It doesn't, you know, this... She might as well be holding it upside down, you know.
Yes.
Sort of, and I get very annoyed at that.
I really do too, I have to say. If you're going to have anybody holding, even just holding a musical instrument, at least have a musician on the set. I will say that for the record.
Unforgivable.
Yeah. Surely. Attention to detail.
Yeah.
We'll put the call out here on LPO Offstage.
Yeah.
So I love that we've covered so much, and we could have literally a podcast on each of these different areas. But I do want to touch on sort of the experience that you've had as an orchestra playing along to the movies live. So it's kind of flipping it on its head now. Outside of the recording, the movie exists. What are some of your experiences of playing along to the movie on the screen for the audience to enjoy? What's the experience like?
I was trying to think. We did something in the Albert Hall. I think it was one of the... Was it the Fellowship of the Ring?
It was, yeah.
Complete, yeah. It was the complete film, which is around about 3 hours. And as with all of those films, the music hardly ever stops. You've got a three-hour film with probably 2 hours 50 of music in it, something, you know, that's something of that measure. So it was hard work, particularly as we had to run it through in the afternoon for the conductor, or for us to make sure it all lined up properly. That was with a conductor who knows the film, a chap called Ludwig Vicky, with whom we've worked a few times, and he knows these films absolutely backwards.
Mm.
So he's, you know, flawless in catching those ribbons. Except there aren't any.
Except there aren't any, yeah. That's
one that I remember.
I remember doing Festival Hall, Carl Davis, so the silent movies.
Oh, yeah, the Chaplin ones.
Movies, and Ben-Hur as well. I remember that many, many years ago. This epic film scores where there is, you just literally, the music is it.
It's the film, yeah.
There is no dialogue.
Do you like that? Do you prefer that?
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, you sit where you normally sit and you've got a pile of music in front of you which you've got to play. So you're not really aware that much of course, you're aware of the, you know, what you're doing, but you're sort of quite busy working. You know, you're not stepping aside and looking in.
Yeah.
You're busy playing your part and trying to fit in with whatever else is going while watching the conductor. You know, it's the same job, really.
That's a good point.
Back to the earlier, you know, when you mentioned about, do you know what's going on in the film? It's not really possible to know unless you go and listen to back in the old days when everyone was there and you'd listen to a playback in the box, and they would play the music with the film with the dialogue over the top or some surtitles or something. That was the first time that you would get any of the narrative. But you had to keep doing that.
You had to keep doing that, exactly.
So what's going on in the story?
I guess it shows that it's not the most important thing. As long as the conductor can see and the conductor knows, you will follow them. You will follow suit.
Well, that's right, but it gave me an image of, say, having been involved, were that to have been the case, which obviously wasn't because I was only about 10 when Jaws was made. But, you know, for the musicians then, if they've been playing this music and John Williams is there going, dum, 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 what's this all about? You know, yeah, and then turning around to the screen and seeing this massive sharp mouth. You know.
Well, you have led me nicely to my next question. In terms of your instrument, what sort of roles are you assigned most when it comes to film music? So for the tuba, I'm scared to ask.
Elephants, wild animals, creatures, undersea, Jaws. Actually, Jaws is a tuba solo.
Jaws describes both of us quite well, doesn't it? Because you've got wobble, 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 and me going bang, bang.
Actually, the best... Well, in my opinion, the best orchestrator for the tuba is John Williams. Oh. In fact, John Williams loved the tuba. He used it in every single movie. And it plays, you know, it features in a lot of his The March of Little People, Star Wars. Jabba the Hutt is a big tuba solo.
Yes.
In the Harry Potter films. In fact, he liked the tuba so much, he wrote a tuba concerto. Which not many people know that. But it's actually a really good piece.
Yeah.
It's difficult to play. It's difficult to learn. Mm. And it's nicely orchestrated. So we've got two Williamses. We've got Vaughan Williams and John Williams.
Right. And what about how the timpani is used in film scores? What do you find yourself having to do a lot of?
Well, you know, big roles are OLLS affecting big climaxes, crescendos and that sort of thing. And texture of that sort, providing often quiet stuff. Actually, Howard wrote lots of really atmospheric stuff quietly for the timps, and often very low. So right down in Lee's register, actually, you know, down bottom D's and C's, yes. And he was very fond of that way of writing. And then you'll get your classic kind of battle scenes where you're just smashing away all over the place. And lots of notes to find, so very busy with the feet.
Yes.
Lots of that film music is very often very, very busy in that regard. Mm. In fact, I remember, I think there was a cue on The Return of the King that was, when you're getting this music hot off the press or turning up for, what was it, 2 till 5 Watford Coliseum, wasn't it?
There
we were through the doors and you'd see the pad for the first time. Then when Sylvia turned, well, not when you turned up, it would eventually arrive just in time for 2 o'clock. And I remember opening this 6 or 8 page score. You flick through most of it. Oh, dear.
That's quite a challenge, yeah.
Okay, so get the pencil out and here we go and write some markings in and try and...
How much time do you have to prepare?
Well, I mean, in that particular case, no time. Howard was on his way into the studio and he gets on the box and I was still trying to work this out, looking at it, trying to keep my head down. Complete silence and Howard sort of looking through his, before we start, timpani, is that going to work okay?
You could tell, yeah.
Is that a good impersonation?
I'll take it,
work
yeah.
Okay. Let's just try it. I know, you know, I said, yes, it'll be fine, but let's... I don't think you heard me.
No.
Let's try it. And so sort of
thrashed through
this thing.
Yeah,
muddle being the operative. So fortunately, the light wasn't on that, you know, yet. But it, when we play through the thing, then it is on, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Even though you're likely, as we've said with Howard, to be there.
To record
still
it
for another 3 or 6 hours to, you know, record it many more times. But
wow.
But you never know. You know, you've always got to try them. Got to do your best all the time.
Well,
you know this, Yolanda.
Can I mention, I must mention this, because I can't believe I haven't said this yet. John Williams' Close Encounters, when the spaceship, that sound is 2 tubas, 2 contrabassoons. And the whole scene is about 5 minutes long. I've actually got the music at home. It's about 6 pages of this thing.
Wow.
You know, and where they're in a control room, play me D flat, and all this. And it's incredible writing, and I don't think to this day anybody has written anything like that for the tuba.
Wow.
Did he put that into the tuba concerto?
No, he didn't. It was too serious, the tuba concerto. You know, it was sort of... But if you get a chance... It's on YouTube, and I've watched it so many times. And I know the players involved. A guy called Tommy Johnson, who recorded most of the Hollywood films, and a guy called Roger Bober, who was the tuba player in the LA Philharmonic. And there's those two, contrabassoon, maybe organ as well.
Oh, that's a combination.
But it's honestly, it is, and everybody's waiting for that moment and to choose those instruments.
Go tumor.
But you, well, I saw that film before I even knew what tuba was. Wow.
But you might have answered my...
You must watch it.
I absolutely am going to be watching it. I know that the listeners will as well. Yeah. And I love that roundabout moment. And it kind of leads me to my last question. You've probably answered it already. If there was a soundtrack that you could have played on, what would it have been?
That one. Yeah, for me, Close Encounters, without a doubt. But I don't think I'll be able to play it. It's really tricky.
And there's no sort of technical jiggery pokery.
No, in those days.
That was played
in
the moment.
Yeah, probably the whole scene.
And how about for yourself, Simon?
Well, for pure comedy value, obviously Jaws.
Yes.
But also, it being an LPO soundtrack, famously, Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh.
It's just the most fabulous music.
I'm going to have to start a musical playlist to go along with this in the show notes or something. Well, honestly, to you both, thank you so, so much for sharing both insights into your experiences, but also the music that you've enjoyed and loved. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very
much.
Well, that's it for now from LPO Offstage with me, Yolanda Brown. Thanks so much to Lee and Simon for joining me today, immersing ourselves into the world of soundtracks. And if you'd like to send in any question to be featured in this current series, please email offstage@lpo.org.uk. Whether you'd like some tips on warming up or hitting the high notes or maybe low notes, as Lee will attest to, we would love to hear from you. That's offstage@lpo.org.uk. Or you can message us on social media @London Philharmonic Orchestra. I'll see you next time.